You're eating McDonald's again?
I am not eating McDonald's again. I just got the coffee,
okay.
Brad.
All right.
Listen, I'm in this move. I can't make coffee at the house, so I got to do something.
Yeesh.
What don't... Although I have to say, I will be honest. I got a McGriddle.
Oh, the dripping guilt in that voice. It was absolutely delicious.
I tried to hold off on saying that I got a McGriddle, but I couldn't fight it. My guilt immediately kicked in. I did get a McGriddle, and I have to say it was delicious. It was delightful. It was just, it's just sugar and fat. It's just sugar and fat is a McGriddle. That's all it is.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't like mixing savory and sweet. I don't like cooked fruit. I don't like fruit toppings on a steak. I don't like that kind of mix.
All right then. Well, we can leave that there. I have no follow up for that. I don't like milk. All right. I have strong feelings about rye. Don't give me a slice of rye bread. Brad Geiger, curmudgeon.
Oh, well, I've got opinions.
No, but I've grown used now to the taste of McDonald's coffee because I can't really make my own at the house right now.
Love is a nice cup of McDonald's coffee.
Love is two naked babies telling each other they love each other.
We're not going to pretend. We'll introduce her, but Dylan McConis is with us today. Dylan, do you know what we're making fun of here, or was that something that you were never exposed to? And I mean that with literally and figuratively.
Brad, understand that I grew up as an only child of weird parents, so all of my cultural references are back set about 15 to 20 years from my peer group.
Really?
Yes, Yeah, I understand completely. I still haven't seen an episode of Seinfeld, but I have seen every episode of The Bob Newhart Show.
Wow. Though, Dylan, your parents did you wrong, though, if they didn't show you Seinfeld, but they showed you Love Is. That's an unfortunate turn of events for your childhood.
Well, that probably wasn't their fault.
But there was a time like in the 70s, 80s, maybe in, I don't know, how far did it go in the 90s where Love Is was like on every third Hallmark card.
Every third Hallmark card and in every newspaper. Usually they'd use it like back in the classified ads section. It rarely ran up with the comics, but they would use it in weird little spots of the newspaper. And it would always include these two baby people, and they were always naked. Always naked. Yeah. And then the thing would be Love Is in a fabulously 70s font at the top.
Oh boy.
And then the punchline, or I don't know that you'd call it a punchline, would complete the sentence. Love is this, love is that.
Sharing an ice cream cone.
Yes.
And holding hands in the rain.
Yeah.
And always, they always full nipples and, of course, belly buttons. And completely naked and with no explanation whatsoever.
But they had a Barbie and Ken smooth mound, right? It was nothing.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing was going on downstairs.
Yeah. There was just a U-shaped crotch region. That was it.
So the idea was that they were cherubs, right? In the long-standing tradition of naked lower-level angels, of naked cherubs, right? That's what they were?
I don't know that it ever went that far. I actually looked this up because I became fascinated with it last night. These things – this is such a such a typical story. These things started there was this woman. Her name was Kim, and she kind of fell in love. I think I read in one telling of the story, she fell in love as a waitress with this Italian guy that would walk in and come to the restaurant. And she started sending him these love notes and these little illustrations. These were the love notes. It would be love is, and then she'd complete the sentence and put a drawing with it. Love is this, love is that. And they fell in love and got married. And she's got this whole stack of love notes that she sent to him. And he's looking at them one day and says, "Hey, I'm going to take these down to the comic syndicate and see if they want to use it in the newspaper."
Wow.
So he takes these very personal love letters and takes them down to Tribune Media. And they take one look at it and says, "Naked cherub people, of course." And they picked it up.
What a weird thing to have ever existed, love is.
Yeah.
The fact that like someone was like, not only am I in, I'm in big. I want this in 200 papers tomorrow.
Yeah.
This is going to be Gabby Hayes big. We're going to make this huge.
Was really pervasive, though. It's like some kind of herpes simplex.
Yeah, it was like, I always remembered, wasn't it in Parade magazine as well? Yeah, or am I misremembering?
I think it was, right next to Marilyn Vos Savant.
Yeah. What a reference. Marilyn Vos Savant. What is she doing today? Wow.
Having a real high IQ, I guess.
Oh, man.
The sad part is that this Italian guy died like in the 70s of some kind of terminal cancer.
Oh, God.
And she lived for another almost 30 years or so afterwards. But then when she died, of course, in the true tradition of syndicated comics, they brought somebody else in and started, cranking these things out. And it's worth noting that not only the art and the typography has stayed in the 70s, sometimes some of the ideas that they put forward were somewhat behind the times as well. October 14th, 2015, Love Is, knowing that no means maybe, and maybe means yes.
Wow.
That's why I wanted to know whether I could send you guys an image file, because I found that one and I'm
holy
like,
holy crapazoli. That's like, oh, geez. Oh my God. We're going to look over the Love Is oeuvre. How do you say that in French, Dylan? Oeuvre. It's going to be like every third one is going to be like, love is serving your husband. Love is sitting quietly at home while your husband is at work.
Dave, the love is from this week. I just went and looked at it. One of the Love Is comics for this week is Love Is Not Interrupting Him When He's Reading the Paper.
No, it's
and
not.
And there's this illustration of a naked cherub in an easy chair, passed out, the newspaper dangling from his dead arm, and she's looking over him angelically and smiling.
Aww. Holy shit. Love is literally king of queens.
Aww.
Oh my God.
He got into the gin again.
Love is leaving Jimmy alone when he comes home from his sanitation job, Margaret. He's been there all day, for God's sakes. Give him 5 minutes. Love is.
That's what I want. I want a whole series of Brooklyn Love Is.
Love Is, everybody shutting the hell up. God, can't Dad have 5 minutes when he gets home?
Watch the goddamn TV.
Love Is, I just want to sit and watch Charles Kuralt on CBS Good Morning. Come on, leave me alone. What's sad is that woman, there's a lot to unpack that's sad about that. But she, the amazing thing about Love is if you repeated the art every fourth day, would anyone notice? Like, does the art do anything for what the love is?
As long as you included the nipples. I think if you dropped the nipples, people would get upset. But you can include the nipples and you're just fine.
By the way, don't think that Dylan and I didn't notice that you used the phrase full nipples, which is a weird phrase, by the way.
It's a derivation of full frontal nudity.
So it's not like the nipples are anatomically like fully drafted. They're just little dots. It's not like you've got areola differentiation or anything.
However, this is coming from the same time where I don't know whether you guys know this story. It's a somewhat famous story. When Mort Walker would draw Miss Buxley with an exposed belly button, there was a newspaper editor that would slice that belly button off with a razor and started keeping him in a box next to his desk. The Beetle Bailey belly button box.
Wow.
And so Mort found out about this, got pissed off, and drew a whole comic where the entire comic was populated with navel oranges. And he sent the editor a note saying, knock yourself out.
Oh, my God. Love is being a creeper about belly buttons. Weird.
Wow.
Yeah. So it is interesting that they kept their anatomical attributes while at the same time Miss Buxley was getting a belly buttonectomy.
Oh my God.
To be fair, though, I think the love is little creatures basically function as birth control. Show that to your teens and watch any vibe just die on the vine.
Yeah.
Love is sitting real still on the couch.
Love is not for you.
Oh boy. Well, on that note, hi everybody, yes, and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about nipples and making comics.
And making a living from comics. I'm Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and cartoonist of Evil Inc.
And I'm Dave Kellett, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped.
And this week's Hour of Comics Advice is brought to you by your support at patreon.com/comiclab.
Brad, more important than anything else, what is this delightful third voice that we have on the microphones today?
Oh, my God. Dave, listen, we're in for a treat because we've done a podcast with this individual before, and we know that she always brings an extra added sparkle to any audio that we put out. Ladies and gentlemen, the wonderful, the talented, America's sweetheart, Dylan McConus.
Hi.
Hi.
And I did it right. I checked, right?
You stuck the landing.
The hands are up,
Brad. I did
Brad.
It wrong one time, and I just ate my heart
this
out
is just
for
a,
the rest
a
of the week.
Triple axel. You nailed it on pronouncing my last name.
Are you an Olympics fan, Dylan?
I am. I watched a lot of them as a kid, internalized a ton of that. Also, I'm from the Pacific Northwest, so the Tonya Harding scandal was a really big deal here because Tonya Harding was an Oregon girl, so... That was right during an impressionable period of my childhood.
And now Tonya Harding is kind of having a little bit of a rebirth, isn't she? I keep seeing her pop up on social media here.
She is. I, Tonya came out recently, which is a biopic about Tonya Harding.
Oh, I'm sorry. I so don't want to take a drastic left turn, but I have to. You guys both have Netflix, right?
Correct.
Yes.
There is there is a biopic about the guy that helped create National Lampoon called A Futile and Useless Gesture.
Okay.
It's a long title, but it's something like that. Oh my God. I've watched it straight through twice now. It is so freaking good. If you're like me and you have an appreciation for it, particularly for that magazine, which was like, you know, Mad Magazine for grownups, you've got to watch it. It is so well done.
I'll check it out.
Who's the lead in that? I think I saw the screenshot for that one. Well,
Martin Mull plays like the older version of this guy. So he's kind of, and the younger version, I know I've seen his face before, but I don't know who he is.
The other thing we should mention, Brad, is there's another show on Netflix, I think, that you wanted to mention. I can't remember what it was called. Wasn't there another show on Netflix, Brad, that you wanted to mention, Brad, on Netflix?
Brad, the other show. Well, listen, you know that I'm in love with this show. One Day at a Time.
Oh.
It was the only show that I have binged on it and finished it like in 2 days. It's such a fantastic show. I was really scared that they were that.
What? Thanks. Jeez, Brad. Oh, man.
What? Well, I can go
Bradley.
Back and beep that, but it's been out for a while, hasn't it?
Bradley J. Geiger. Oh, my God. Oh, boy, I tell you what, I was sure afraid that Luke wasn't going to do. You're like, no, stop.
I have opposite TV viewing philosophy to my wife, Katie. She likes to watch, you know, in a binge, front to back, as quickly as possible. And I, you know that the psych experiment where you put a marshmallow in front of a kid, and if you say, if you don't eat this marshmallow for the next 10 minutes, you can have two marshmallows. I was the kid who would have given the marshmallow in front of me a name so that I would be emotionally attached to it and not want to eat it. And then when I got the other marshmallow, I would have been like, it has a friend now, and I wouldn't have ended up eating either of them. So I would have been racked with guilt. That's kind of how I work with TV shows I love also. So I made this season of One Day at a Time last, like, seriously, several weeks.
Good on you.
I, you know, two at a time is like the most I will allow. And I'm like, no, I want to savor it. I want it to last longer.
And how does that go down between you and Katie when she's like, we've got Saturday. We're not doing anything today. Let's just power this out. And you're like, no, we're going to treacle this out. What is your argumented style?
Watch them all. And then she just has to, you know, rewatch them with me.
At this point, I've watched
all of Jane the Virgin, pretty much once. And I think she's on about her third go around.
Yeah. Well, that raises a parallel question. When you both discover a comic that you love that has already been published a long time ago, do you sit and power out the whole thing at once, or do you trickle it out like you would had you discovered it at the time of its publishing?
You know, with books, I behave very differently. With books, I will absolutely plow through them front to back. And I really love giant, thick, long graphic novels. Oh, that sounds really dirty. I'm sorry.
Love is
a thick, long graphic novel.
Juicy. No, I studied literature in college, so I'm really used to large tomes. And I love a graphic novel that I can't finish in one sitting. Or if I do, it's a whole day's commitment.
The only reason I bring that question up, Dylan, is because recently I discovered, and I was super late to the game, the Astro City series. Are you both familiar with that one?
Mm-hmm.
And so I plowed through the first two. And for whatever reason, the LA Public Library System didn't have the third one readily available. So I had to wait a month. And I have to say, there was something kind of fun to the fact that I couldn't just plow through all of them in a weekend, that I had to wait a while for some of them. And then that happened again, I think, on the fifth book, where I had to wait a bit. And there's something fun about recreating that publishing delay that you get, like when you used to have to wait for Harry Potter's, or you used to have to wait for the next Amulet, for example, or, you know, something. Yeah. It's fun to introduce a delay. There's something to that.
Well, and you know, serialized works that are intended to really be taken in chunks, I think that can add to the flavor of the story. There's a little break between them.
Yeah, you get like a little bit of time to emotionally chew on it, you know, and, mm-hmm. and to ruminate over possibilities of where the story's going and this and that.
And maybe even reread it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, Brad.
That thought never occurred to me.
No, that's how time crushed I am. I'm like, I got through a book. Hooray for me. Good job, Dave. You did it. You did it.
Speaking of time, it is time we need to thank and mention our sponsor. Because
first sponsor for Comic Club.
Yeah. At the $50 Patreon level, you could, too, be a sponsor just like this young cartoonist. And we're going to talk to him now. But listen, before I do this, Dylan didn't tell you this. She's learning the ukulele.
What? It's true.
That's what she was doing when we just first started. Before you got there, she was playing a little ukulele.
This is, I can we hear it in the background?
So, Dylan, if you would be so kind, could you give me a little ukulele background while we read our sponsor?
Sure, yeah, go for it.
Oh, Dave, this is going to be such a classy damn
thing.
This
adds so much class to the show.
Oh, wait, I bought a felt pick. I'm going to use that.
In a world where humans are endangered and live among mythological beasts, the Deimos Chronicles, Advent of Light, follows the story of a young monk who receives a prophecy from the gods of his world and must travel between realms to learn its truth before tensions rise and war seals humanity's fate. The Deimos Chronicles .co/comic/1. That's thedaemoschronicles.co/comic/1. Whew, I almost ran out of wind there at the end.
I have to say, two things. First,
Dylan, thank you so much. That was exactly what we needed.
Your ukulele is amazing. I have to say, though, my wife Gloria and I have a joke that we always seem to walk into restaurants where the music does not match the restaurant. Have you ever experienced this as a couple?
That's a real buzzkill. So,
like when you walk into an Indian restaurant and they're playing James Brown, and you're like, wait, what? James Brown is in an Indian restaurant? Or you walk into a Chinese restaurant and they're – and they're playing.
Papa's got a brand new bag of garlic.
Yeah, that can be really. It can confuse your palate.
And so, hearing about the Deimos Chronicles, and then hearing the ukulele in the background, that reminded me of good Lord, what happened to my brain?
Well, it's packed up for the move, Dave.
It is backed up. That's well, on that note, Brad, we have our a fantastic set of questions that we're going to grab from readers this week. And do you want to go ahead and read those out, the first one, and we can have Dylan and myself and yourself?
Yeah, we've got a good one. We've got a good one to start with. This one starts, what have you found is the most effective way to grow your readership? I mean, besides the obvious, create great content.
Ooh, now Brad, we've been holding this back. Should we talk about the big secret?
Oh, yeah, hold on. Let me hit the button here. We're going to record this part just for our friend that wrote that question. Everybody else is going to get a different version of this podcast without this part in it, but using algorithms, we're able to send this podcast right to his or hers. I'm not going to reveal this person's iPhone or Samsung Galaxy.
Cool.
I do not want to get specific. The algorithm, I got it. But listen, you guys, we got it. Because he asked. We got to tell them what the secret hashtag is.
I don't know that we're ready to share the secret hashtag just because they asked. I don't.
Well, listen, he's a $5 backer.
The secret hashtag has made so many careers. You don't want to share that. That's not what we're about.
Yeah, we took an oath.
I feel like that's.
Well, we're not sharing. We're just giving it to one person. I think we could clear it with the webcomics Pope, but I like doing things on the fly.
I don't know. I just feel like the Plantagenet's going to get mad at us if we reveal the secret hashtag.
Yeah.
I like how you tried to hold back a laugh on Plantagenet. That was amazing.
Stop. Okay, we're being serious. So you're not going to tell them that it's the secret hashtag of hashtag webcomics 502.
What?
Do I have the wrong? Have I been using the wrong secret hashtag all this time? No wonder my numbers are so low. I'm using the wrong magic hashtag.
You're not using the right magic hashtag, Brad.
God damn it. Well, then I'm not going to give it to this guy. Hold on. Listen, if I've been using the wrong, he could just have to suffer with me. I'm hitting the button. We're going to go back to the live show, okay? All right. So here's the deal. There's lots of ways to create an increased readership. And as I've said a number of times, the number one way is create great content. This question is written in such a way. I mean, besides the obvious, create great content. When I read that sentence, it's almost like, well, listen, of course I'm creating great content. I want to know the other ways. And the answer to that question is, there's no other way to put this. If you were creating great content, you'd have huge readership. There's no way of hiding great content. As long as you're making it easy for your readers to share your stuff, easy for them to find you, and with social media, it is so easy. This is spoken as a guy that spent many years not creating great content. In fact, believe me, there's a lot of people that point at my stuff and say, I still got a long ways to go. And they're right. But the only way to do this is create great content. All that other stuff that you're going to find in all of the advice sites and Facebook groups about SEO and advertising and promotion and social media and hashtags and all this other stuff is secondary. You cannot put a great enough emphasis on create great content. All that other stuff is number two. Am I right or am I wrong? Dylan and Dave, I ask you both.
I want to transfer this question into human relationships because I think you'll see where the faulty reasoning can start to come in. And you know those books that are like, how do I fool someone into liking me? Or how do I gain friends? Or how do I, or even those creepier, like men's rights activists kind of like.
How to hypnotize women.
Yeah, how to poor women.
Yes.
Like, well, the secret is to be a good person and make people want to be around you. That's the secret. I mean, and that's the short version of it, is that when you are kind to people, when you are warm and funny and you add to the presence of their life and you make their day better, then people will want to be around you. And so, like, finding a shortcut to that is not the way to do it. And if anything, is a short, infinitely short-term solution. And the same is true with comics, is that can SEO tricks work? Absolutely. Can social media hashtags work and social media tricks work? Absolutely. But it's all short-term. I think Brad has said it once. Brad has said it best when he said, you know, you can get people to look once. And if that's what you're after, if you can get the trick of getting them to look once, great. But what will get them to come back, and more importantly, what will get them to spread the word, by which way you're compounding your ability to reach people, the only way to do that is good content. And so think of it like your interpersonal relationships. Can you force someone to say hello to you on the street? Yes. But the only way to be to gain a friendship and to in turn gain a group of friends, like in at a new school, at a new college, new town, is to be warm and generous and funny and kind and make people want to be around you. And so comics are not that different from human relationships. The idea is to put the joy into your comics and the talent into your comics. And once that happens, the truth of the internet is you almost can't hide good content. It will find its way out there when it is good. And people, it's kind of weird in a way that, you know, sometimes it's a 21-year-old that breaks on the internet and sometimes it's a 45-year-old that breaks on the internet. But all that took, the only common denominator was their work was good and it finds a way out there. So that's my take on it. Dylan, what's your take on it?
I'm going to suggest something that I don't see a lot of folks who do web comics that are a little more traditional in format doing. So people who are doing like humor strips, like Sheldon, for example, and that is to do projects with friends or do stuff in other publishing methods as well that put you in front of people who maybe wouldn't find your work as it is now naturally. So do a short story, apply to an anthology that's funding through Kickstarter, do a one-off crossover with somebody whose strip you like that you met at a convention and you're friends with, do an autobiographical mini comic. Just try mixing it up a little bit, because work that's done in different formats will reach different audiences, and you can get a lot of people crossing over to what you think of as your primary work by doing something that they stumble across in their normally very different routines. So my webcomic Family Man gets a lot of readers who don't really follow a lot of graphic novels online. But, you know, they saw my my short comic Outfoxed in their local comic book store, or they came across one of the mini projects I've done with friends online. And that way they tracked back to me and started reading my work through my website or started following me on Twitter. So even if you're, I know it can feel like you're really snowed down by that daily deadline of putting your main project's new stuff online, but it's really important to occasionally take a little bit of a breather and do something just a little off normal. And that's advice for finding friends in a new place too, right? Like, don't just sit in your room and expect people to knock on the door and say, let's be friends. You have to go out to a freaking salsa dancing class or take up rock climbing. It's kind of the same with comics.
That's really good advice. That's not jaded or sour like mine. That's probably the best advice that
you. Well, you know what? I stumbled on it accidentally, but I actually think the idea of making friends is an interesting parallel. If you think about it, back to high school or college, or you know, a new job in a new town, is that there's a billion little steps that you take, all of which to make yourself seem open and friendly and kind. And you notice by your senior year, you're like, wow, how do I know 300 people and, or, you know, 300 people know me and vice versa? How do I get along with each one of these? And you go back and you trace it. Oh, well, this one's from drama club. That one's from student government. This one's from playing football. This one's from, and it's not unlike your comic career, is that if I went back and traced how I first met Brad, first met Dylan, first got on to Go Comics, first did Instagram, all these things. It's like Dylan said, it's from branching out and trying new things and going out and meeting people. And all these connections slowly add up to your career.
that it's akin to what Brad and I always say, that there's many legs under the table for your income. All these little things and all that you do and all these little connections that you make online and offline will slowly add to your career. So there is absolute truth to that.
I hunted you like a gazelle, Dave.
Hunted me?
Yeah.
No, that's not true.
I did. It was a lot. Yeah. Like,
what is the back? Wait, I don't know this backstory. Then what is this? What nonsense is this?
Yeah, no, I read your bio at some point. I was like, somebody who also went to college. Yay!
That's the most obscure thing to like latch onto. Someone who also has two legs.
No. You did a graduate degree in cartooning history, and I thought that was super duper interesting. And I went to college for reading, you know, prose and nonfiction, not comics per se. So I was really interested in talking more to you, and I think at some point I sent you an email basically informing you that we were going to be friends.
I do remember that. Yes. Looking back now, yes, that was an email.
Yeah, you can get away with a lot and when you're like a 5'2" female. That would not fly if I were, say, a large man. But
hey, it's me, Bruno. We're going to be friends, yeah. Brad, we're going to be good friends. Come here.
We're buddy now.
We're going to go on this roller coaster together. Wait, I don't want to go on a roller coaster. We're going to go on a roller coaster.
So, you know, your mileage may vary, but it's important to reach out sometimes to people whose general vibe you like.
Well, listen, I will say this, and all of that, I still, because I'm a the curmudgeon I am, all of that is going to work if the content is great. I will tell you this. One thing, and it's been like the unofficial mantra of webcomics.com since I started that site. There is one thing that I do think that, along with creating great content, is kind of a secret of success. And that is that every day you have to remember that somebody's coming to your site or discovering your comic for the first time.
Oof, yeah.
And you have to do everything you can to make sure that you keep them in the moment. And that's particularly important for long form comics creators who are posting their comic by putting up a site. And then when you come to their comic, you see like whichever page is the most recent page. And when you're throwing a reader into that experience and they're getting like page 13 and they have no idea what's going on, that's not going to keep that reader. And I think long forms comic creators particularly have to reimagine how they're publishing a webcomics site in such a way that that site is geared towards retaining the first time reader.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I will add to my somewhat jaded initial response, is that you have to remember every time somebody's seeing that comic, some of them are seeing it for the first time, and you've got to write it in such a way that it's got a better chance of retaining them, and publish your site in such a way that retention is.
That is a great, great point. And in fact, I will echo that, Brad, that it's one that I don't know that we've ever really talked about, but you've also got to think of the 100 to 200 people on any given day that are like, do I want to keep following this comic? And you got to win those people back on any given day. So it's capturing the new person who's coming there for the first time, but it's also recapturing or retaining the 1 or 2% of your readership at any given time that's like, do I want to keep following Sheldon? I don't know. Was it better before and now it's kind of fading for me? Oh, wait, this one's really good. I'll give it another try. I'll keep it in my bookmarks or I'll follow it on Twitter, you know, that kind of thing. So at any given point,
your experiment with putting it on Instagram is so great, by the way. I love
well,
it.
Well, I have to say,
I love reading Sheldon
the
on
one
Instagram.
Thing that I did want to say, I know we started in a jaded way and talking about good content. And I think that's true because you can't emphasize that enough. But I have to say that for short form stuff, and this is not applicable for my long form comic drive, so you won't see that on Instagram. But Chris Halbeck, to his great credit, has done wonderful work putting up his panel by panel comics on Instagram, and I loved it so much that I asked him how he did it and how he went about it. And I started doing it with Sheldon, and you basically slice up the comics into single panel formats. And I've actually started drawing Sheldon perfectly square panels now, specifically because I like Instagram so much. And what you do is you can't, your eye can't jump ahead to that final panel, which mine always does, even though I've been reading comics for 30, 40 years now. You have to go panel by panel, and it makes it really fun when you get to the reveal or where you get to the punch. So, I can't recommend that enough. The growth on Instagram for me is stupid crazy. I started doing it 6 months ago, I think, and it's grown 16,000 people in 6 months.
Wow.
And by the way, that does not surprise me. I don't say that in a braggy way because Twitter, I think I've gained 10 people in those same 6 months. I put a lot more effort and work into Twitter, and Twitter has not grown at all for me. But Instagram, I don't know if the Russian bots have turned their attention to Instagram or what, but the growth there has been ridiculous.
Well, it's better integrated with Facebook too. I think that that's something Instagram has going for it. So a lot of people who don't use the open internet or who find Twitter justifiably scary are very comfortable using Instagram.
Yeah, and I think there is something to the fact that Instagram better speaks to our post-text, our increasingly post-text world, you know, people less and less want to interact with words and more with pictures and sound, and Instagram gets you that perfectly, you know.
I've got to say, we've mentioned Instagram on this show in some of the early episodes, and I've really bemoaned the fact that I have not been able to make inroads. And recently, I had two huge success stories, and one of them involves our friend Chris Halbach, who you mentioned, creator of MaxiMumble, that he, out of the kindness of his heart, just one day dropped me a note and said, "Hey, I like this comic that you did not so long ago. I'm going to advertise it on at the end of my comic when I put it up on Instagram tomorrow."
Wow.
And he's at the level where you can, and once you get to a certain threshold, you can include links in your posts at Instagram. And he long ago walked over that threshold. So he can run, in effect, ads. So somebody can pay him to buy the last panel of his Instagram series, and he can put a link in it, and he can monetize it that way. And out of kindness, he drops a line and says, "Ah, oh, you did this comic that I really think is good. It's a single panel comic. I'm gonna advertise it." And of course, I said, "Yes, please. That would be great." And in 24 hours, he raised my Instagram followers by 50%.
Woof!
that's the kind of and see, that's what I really respect out of Instagram is that he can wield his social media followers. I mean, he could with a well-placed promotion or a well-placed ad, he can direct traffic, and that's very impressive to me. It means that anybody buying an ad on his comic is getting their money's worth, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and it's important to note that you didn't like beg him for that or work up to wheedling it out of him. It was earned through being good colleagues.
Quite literally, yeah, it was quite literally.
On that note, Brad, since he was kind to you, we should answer a kindness with a kindness. So we should mention Instagram.com/Chris Hall, like a hallway, Hall Beck is his URL. And you should check it out because he's doing, frankly, everything right on Instagram and has now over 200,000 followers, which is great.
And his content is fantastic. He is routinely hitting it out of the park in terms of his punchlines.
And I find it really interesting, the idea that you can monetize Instagram, which I was sort of fascinated when I first noticed that with him, that he could sell advertising space at the tail end of a comic. It's a really clever way. I'm growing Instagram mainly for, frankly, for new audiences. I've noticed a lot of people from Singapore and from, what was the other country I noticed a lot from? I guess it was India. India and Singapore on Instagram. And I'll be honest, I don't know that Sheldon would have reached them had it not been for Instagram, even though Sheldon's been online for almost 20 years now. There's just new audiences in new places. And so that is one bit of echoing advice that I will go from Brad's and Dylan's earlier point, is that increasingly, you have to go where the audiences are. And a lot of that is different social networks. So when I post a Sheldon up on my website, I tweet about it with the image embedded. I slice it up and I put it on Instagram. I post it on Reddit, and I post it two places in comics and funny. And then what's the other place? I put it on Facebook, but with a lot of chagrin do I put it on Facebook, because I just don't like Facebook. but I put it up there, Dave, because there's still a few thousand people that read Sheldon on Facebook. And I was like, all right, here you go. It's something about Facebook just feels evil empire-y to me. I don't know, in a way that Instagram doesn't, even though they own it.
Maybe it's the fact that they're an evil empire. Is that it?
But the growth, I have to say, though, the growth on Instagram is so large that I am not entirely sure, and I say this with a suspicious heart, I'm not entirely sure that Facebook is not trying to puff up their numbers by having a lot of bot accounts, or maybe it is the Russians trying to figure out a new way to influence people visually, and so they have a lot of fake accounts. But the growth on Sheldon on Instagram has been so high, so quick, that I am suspicious of it in a way that I don't quite know how to quantify. So take that with a grain of salt. Are there new followers that are human beings? Absolutely. Do I think all of those are people? No, I don't. Something's up with Instagram, and I'm not sure what. I know that sounds very tinfoil on the head, but there you go.
Out of curiosity, Dylan, what's your social media approach? How do you get your stuff out through social media?
Lol. right now, my social media approach is pretty terrible right now, because I'm pursuing an audience that is largely not finding content to read online, and that is middle grade audiences. Mm-hmm. So the big project I'm working on right now is an enormous book aimed at 10 to 14 year olds. And while there are certainly a lot of 10 to 14 year olds who are reading online content, obviously there are tons of YouTube followers who are kids in that age range. If you want to tell a long form story, the way you reach those kids still is through traditional publishing. And they find it in their school library or at a bookstore, or a friend loans it to them physically.
Yeah.
So, you know, I recognized that the kind of work I wanted to do was not actually a great fit for digital media. The way that social networks help that kind of work is through connections to booksellers, librarians, and other authors. So I have spent a lot of time in the last few months just trying to observe the social connections between people who work in that part of traditional publishing, just watch their conversations. That sounds really creepy. God, just everything I say is just stalker material today. But just intentionally following more folks who are really embedded in that field. And there are really strong social connections. And because it's mostly adults talking to other adults and discussing the ways that they impact their readership and the ways they reach their readership, I've picked up a lot of great knowledge and information and tips on how to navigate that world. You know, a lot like how I figured out how to work in online comics. So it's been a really interesting sort of shift from broadcasting to listening for me. Mm-hmm. And I know in short order, I'm going to be going back on Blast. The other project I'm working on is a 10 issue comic I'm co-writing that's going to be published by Oni. So instead of going to major mainstream bookstores, it's going to be published first in comic book stores. So, and it's for adults. So that's a place where I'm going to be telling everybody on Twitter how to pre-order my first edition of my graphic novel that's going to be available in their local comic store.
Nice.
So it's been a big change up from learning how to promote my webcomic to learning how to promote stuff that is not going to exist digitally first in digital spaces. And I've absolutely been in learning mode for that.
Well, there's mm-hmm. a couple of things that I want to unpack here as a friend. The first is, as a friend and as a host, I have failed in that I have not directed people where they can find tidbits and huge chunks of all that work. And I'm going to spell this out because there might be a couple different ways that people would think to spell your last name. So DylanMeconis.com is Dylan's website. And from there, you can check about her books, news, her illustration, her store, and the upcoming projects, which you absolutely want to follow. And then the second thing I wanted to follow up with was the idea, and I appreciate the joke behind it, but the idea that you were stalkery by following people in the trade and learning about it, because I know you were joking, but it's actually something that I've always admired about you, is that, and even from that earliest email, you do a fantastic job of You know those, whenever they, this is going to be a terrible comparison. You know when they follow, you know they follow octopuses and those certain types of octopuses that are amazing at learning and figuring out like puzzles, and then they blend into their environment. They have that amazing 1-2 punch of survival. So like you can put an octopus in a maze, it'll work itself out. It'll squeeze through tiny little holes. It'll change what it needs to change to survive, and then it'll.
I'm totes that octopus.
Yeah, and I have to say, I hope you take that as the compliment I intend. Dylan, you're like an octopus, but
they're one of my favorite animals, Dave. So I'm very.
They
flattered.
Are legit cool though, and they're super smart. Certain species of them. But anyway, the. Your ability to learn from, mimic, take in, absorb, and reinterpret, and create entirely new art from all those steps has been amazing to watch. You are very good at. We could drop Dylan into kids publishing, and within 2 years she would be a master of it. We could drop her into into adult graphic novel, and within a year or two she'd be a master of it. You could drop her into anything, and she's very good. That's why I want to say I want to counterbalance your idea that you were stalkering, because it's actually one of your skill sets is that you're very good at learning from professionals in their field about how they do what they do. And that's a skill set that Brad and I were talking about on an earlier show about having to omnivorously consume and watch other artists to see what they do. And you do that very, very well. And so I wanted just to say that as a compliment to you as a friend.
Thank you, Dave. It's something I really enjoy doing. And, you know, I see a lot of creators who are rightfully very, very focused on, you know, creating their work. But I also see a lot of artists who are so monomaniacally focused on just doing the work that they end up missing out on really helpful, basic professional knowledge. And that concerns me, like the sheer number of mentorship kids. So I work at a studio, for those who don't know, called Helioscope. And it's about 24 cartoonists in one office suite in downtown Portland, Oregon. And we regularly have young and emerging artists come in for basically a 3-month residency in the studio. Mentorship kids is what we call them, or adults in some cases. And I am stunned at the number of them who don't know what a literary agent is or does, who don't know the difference between how comics publishing works versus how Kickstarter publishing works versus how mainstream publishing works, who just really don't have any skill set in terms of how to work the industry or what people who aren't artists do. And it's really important to be curious about that stuff, because you never know when you're going to need to change your strategy or when your artistic priorities are going to change and you're going to need to be able to support them. So I really encourage all of you to explore the communities that are parallel to your instinctive one and see if maybe there are techniques or people or projects out there that speak to you and that can shift your work in a really valuable way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because you have basically built up an ever-expanding set of tools by trying out different comics projects. I mean, I have not read the script for Queen of the Sea, as probably only a few people have at this point, but I would imagine that because of your skill set or years of working on a totally different work like PvP, it probably doesn't influence a lot of that of Queen of the Sea, but I bet there's one or two pages where that came in handy, you know, where some visual punch or some joke embedded into a serious story. Just having that tool in your toolbox is so handy for future comics, and you don't know where and how it's going to be applied. But so if you're monomaniacally going after one style of comics, you're missing out on possibly little tidbits that you can pick up here and there from different other style of projects. That's a fantastic point, Dylan.
We've got another from a Patreon backer who, as part of their reward, they can send in a question, writes this: I sometimes feel like the more time and energy I devote to my webcomic, the more my health and or performance at my day job suffers. I want to push myself to improve the craft I love, but I also keep myself and my I also want to keep myself and my family physically, emotionally, and financially well. What advice would you give for seeking an appropriate balance? Dylan McConus, what do you think?
I'm going to preface this by saying I don't have children, so feel free to take everything I say with a grain of salt, because my dependents currently are a rescue dog and two gray tabby cats. And obviously, I'm a full-time cartoonist, so I don't have a day job per se. I do have a lot of client work that is not necessarily my creative dream projects or my long-term ambitions. It's really income work, but it sort of functions like a day job for me. But I have had a lot of juggling to do in my professional life. My family, my wife and I, we are both self-employed. So work-life balance is really something that we've both had to tackle. You know, how do you maintain a relationship when it's possible for you both to be working all the time? How do you separate workspace at home from just being together space? And how do you balance the jobs you take on, knowing that sometimes those projects that don't pay off at first are going to be the ones that really make your career later on? And I'm going to use a piece of knowledge that I learned in a yoga class.
All right.
It sounds so woo-woo.
Wow, woo-woo. That's a phrase I've never heard before. It sounds so woo-woo.
Are you serious?
No. Oh, is that a legit phrase, or did you make that up?
It absolutely is, Dave. Maybe you need to live in Portland to understand.
I've heard frou-frou. I've heard frou-frou, and I've heard like shishi for rich, but I've never heard woo-woo. What is? Give me the specifics of what woo-woo means.
So here's an example of woo-woo. I once took a yoga class with a substitute teacher who told us to breathe in the color gold.
I'm out.
And exhale the color blue.
Can I tell you, Dylan, I had that same teacher in Los Angeles once. I'm not joking.
Yeah.
I got news for you. That teacher is not going to make it out of Philadelphia.
Good. Take care of that for us. But that's a prime example of woo-woo, where something is just, it's so earnest, but it's too earnest. And it just, I mean, everybody has a gag reflex at a different point, right? But it just crosses over into the sentimentally esoteric. But the thing I figured out in yoga class while trying to balance on one leg with all of my other limbs splayed out in various directions was that balance is not a stable state. It's actually very dynamic and it's very challenging. If you try to take a balance pose like that in yoga, what you find out is that your leg that's on the ground has to work really hard, not to hold you up, but to compensate for the natural wobbles that your body experiences as, you know, you breathe or as your shoulder gets tight, so you shift your arm down a little. All those muscles, particularly around your shins and your feet, really have to be engaged, and they have to be ready to change at a moment's notice where that engagement is most intense. And that's the thing about having a complex professional and personal life as well. There's not going to be a continuous magic formula that you just achieve someday where you're like, ah, yes, exactly 72 minutes at home spent on my own project between 7 p.m. And then there isn't a perfect medium. It's going to be different, you know, sometimes day to day. Sometimes it's going to be 1 year. Something is really clicking for you, so you don't see your family as much. Sometimes it's just going to be 1 week where you're trying to crush a deadline, or, you know, your kid is sick, so you're going to invest time in spending it with her. So, this is really frustrating advice to give, but it's be flexible and recognize that, yeah, sometimes you are going to feel like garbage because you're burning the candle at every possible end. And, you know, sometimes you're not going to feel like the world's best parent or partner, or you're going to feel like you're kind of dragging at work a little. But as long as you're staying aware of it and you're willing to shift to kind of make up for lost ground on those fronts, you're going to be okay. And you're going to be able to figure it out as you go along and as things change.
Balance is an active state. May be the most brilliant thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, you breathed in some serious gold right there. That was great.
And and you exhaled some beautiful brew. No, but you know, in the movies, there's always that moment where somebody's trying to do something that involves balance, right? Whether it's like holding a stack of dishes that's, you know, comically high. And they always get to that point where somebody says, you know, where they've achieved balance, and the person says, don't move. Right. We're familiar with that don't move a moment in movies and TV. Mm-hmm. And the thing that you're pointing out is that balance is all about constant movement.
Yep.
Just not where you might expect it to be.
Yeah. Where you're always going to be like, if I could just figure it out, I'd be able to swipe the idol off of this panel and put the bag of sand on it, yeah, and then escape into the jungle unharmed. But no, that moment never happens.
Yeah. I mean, if people looking at my life at the points where they thought, oh boy, Dave's really got it figured out, they're looking at the very calm duck above the water and not seeing the padded feet going under the water. You know? So it is that mix of stillness and movement that's interesting and balance. And I would like to chime in here that I'm now in my 40s and I still struggle with balance all the time. My great fault in my 20s, and maybe it was to my long-term benefit, but I still look back on it with a little bit of a grimace, is that I worked too much in my 20s and 30s. And I know that's the case because I ended up having a very weird neurological disorder because of it called costoclavicular syndrome, where my nerves in my drawing arm at my shoulder, both my nerves and my blood flow at my shoulder started to pinch off. And so my hand went cold and my drawing hand would shake. And if you would touch just the teeny tiny little hairs on my ear, my right ear, I would feel it in my fingertips because the nerves couldn't figure out where the signals were coming from.
Ooh, so, a little impingement there.
Ooh. Oh, a lot of impingement. And Brad, it took 2 years of physical therapy to fix it. And so that episode was really instructive to me, both that's why I went to a standing drawing desk, and but it also was that to a fault, one of my benefits is that I will outwork a problem, but one of my faults is that I will outwork a problem. I will intentionally forget to eat or sleep so that I can keep working, and that's not right. And so a big challenge in my 40s has been to try to say, you've done enough, this is all you can do, and it's good enough, go play with your children, or go eat dinner, go relax, allow yourself to read for a little bit. Yeah. And you know what? And on some days, maybe I give myself the version of a mental health day by saying, no good comic is coming, take a break. Don't, you know what I mean? Put the pen down. Nothing is happening at this moment. This is you could force it, but it would take another 8 hours. Just go do something else.
And 9 chances out of 10, when you do come back, there's the comic.
Yeah. It's a form of clenching, like in the sense that if you're like, oh, I got to make a comic. I have an hour to make a comic, make the comic. What's the idea? Make the comic. But when you go and relax and you're at a park and you're looking at kids playing, or you're watching old people cuddling on a park bench, or you're looking at birds and you're like, oh, okay, life. And then right in that moment, that's when the idea comes. And you're like, whoa, yeah. Okay. And
it's you're just, like, whoa, love is.
That's why we love you as a guest. You know exactly how to bring it full circle.
Yeah.
Just right over the plate.
But Bradley J. Geiger, we did not hear your interpretation of how to find a work-life balance, because I think in a way you and I had similar paths in that we overworked in our 20s and 30s. But what would you say now?
Yeah. And as somebody who's now staring down the barrel of 50, let me tell you this, and it's probably the best advice I could give anybody. And that is, it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Yes.
And all of these people that I see, you know, trying to update every day, and you know, the way we told them to do it 10 years ago in the How to Make Webcomics book, before there was social media. And these people who are trying so hard, trying to do, it's you've got time, yeah. You know, and the irony is, if you keep working yourself like that, you're going to have less time because something's going to happen, like, you know, like Dave was just explaining, or you're going to drive yourself to an early heart attack.
Yeah. Burnout is real.
And Frankly, you should be enjoying this. If there comes a time that this is taking the place of enjoyment, taking precedent over being with the people that you love or doing the things that you love, then your priorities are out of whack and mm-hmm. you got to snap out of it. And that comic will still be there. You can miss an update and your readers are still going to be there next week when you come back. You may have left a few, but the beautiful thing about the internet is that there's always new people coming on every day. Yeah. You got a whole new batch. Today, I'm going to make up a statistic. Another, I don't know, 500,000 people just came to the internet for the first time today. Probably pretty accurate, but not necessarily.
Yeah, but point made.
But a whole bunch of people just came and signed on to the internet for the first time today. That's a whole new batch of readers that you got a shot at. So anybody that you lost today, you got a whole new batch of new doofuses that don't know anything about you. As far as they know, you're the greatest thing since sliced bread. You got your crack at them. So take it next week.
Brad, your idea that it's a marathon, not a sprint is fantastic advice. That really summarizes the way to look at this is that, and you know, if you tie that in with Jake Parker's great idea of the most important thing in this moment, if you see that it's a marathon and that you know in your heart of hearts that you're, if it's not working for you right now, you're going to still be plugging away 10 years from now, 5 years from now, 15 years from now. And then you look in this moment and the most important thing for you in this moment is that you get some sleep or that you be with your kids or that you tell your wife that you love her or that you get a good healthy meal or go to the gym. Then you'll see that in this marathon, not sprint, in this marathon, that you should go to the gym or you should tell your wife you love her or you should hug your kids or, you know, and so the balance of those two things of seeing Brad's great idea that it's a marathon, not a sprint, and Jake's idea of what is the most important thing in this moment, I think that'll help you find on a daily basis what is the best thing that I could be doing right now in this longer marathon of my career.
Oh yeah, and listen, it's okay if you are listening to this thinking, oh no, I've done it. You know, my priorities are out of whack. You're talking to a guy that is ashamed to admit how many times that one of his sons came scampering into the room saying, "Hey, let's play Ultimate Alliance. Let's play the let's do something." And I said, "Ah, geez, I can't. I got to get this done." And I've finally gotten to the point where it's now kind of an automatic. The voice in my head goes off and says, wait a minute. He's the reason you're doing this,
mm-hmm.
right? This is the whole reason that I spent a lot of time and spent those early days working really hard so I could get to the point where I could be a full-time cartoonist, which meant if one of those kids are sick, I don't have to call off work. I just handle it. If they've got a doctor's appointment, I handle it. That's the whole reason I wanted this so badly is to have the flexibility to spend time with those guys. He's the reason you're doing that. So put your pen down and go get your ass kicked on Ultimate Alliance like you always do. You know, it's good for them to beat the old man, you know. But yeah, that's the whole thing is that don't forget what your priorities are. This is the reason you're doing all this shit is so that you can enjoy some of the things in life. So don't hesitate to enjoy them every now and again.
And as we've said in the past too, those moments of enjoyment, they will feed a future idea. So it's not like this is the end game. It's not a duality of, well, I'm either cartooning or I'm not, and so I might as well be cartooning. If Dylan spends a lovely day with her wife, if Dylan cuddles with the cats for a while, if Dylan reads a book, all three of those can feed tomorrow's idea or tomorrow's sense of joy in cartooning. And so it's not an on-off position with cartooning. Your brain is still working on your cartooning while you're enjoying life. So
I have some physical limitations that were a source of great angst and frustration for me in my my teens and 20s in particular that I think ended up being a blessing. I absolutely disintegrate if I don't get 8 to 10 hours of sleep a night, one all-nighter, and I feel like I have the flu the whole next day. And I have some repetitive stress injuries that seem to maybe run in the family a little bit. But I've gotten impingement syndrome as well. That means that I can't hold a pen and forcefully make tiny marks with it all day long without expecting a little blowback. So I have to stop and I have to get cardiovascular exercise. Sometimes I have to go to occupational therapist. But those were barriers that kept me from overworking. And it means that I learned how to be more efficient. And it means that I learned that by force how important rest is. And I see, I was really envious of peers who never experience hand pain and who are able to, you know, just happily pull three all-nighters in a row, happily, but they were able to do stuff like work for, 20 hours in a row. They're kind of catching up to the whole, oh, wait a minute. It's possible to destroy myself for long periods, but it's not actually all that great in the long run. The rewards are diminishing. So, you may be frustrated by your own limitations, but those can kind of be gifts because you get a little red alert when you're headed into a danger zone that maybe some other people don't receive until, they age into it.
Man, I tell you what, I don't know that there's a better way to put a capper on that topic.
Well, I will. I'm going to try. Dylan's excellent point actually raised a large eagle's eye view of your career that I want to put on here. My undergraduate studies were in literature, and one career that I always was fascinated by was Walt Whitman's. So I just want to, from a bird's eye perspective of your cartooning, one of the things that Walt Whitman's career can give us is that, Whitman worked as a government, he worked as a government employee. He worked as a clerk, a teacher. He worked as a journalist at one point. But the thing is, in the background of all of that, he was working on his poetry. And was he the hero in his own time that every artist hopes they could be? Maybe, maybe not. But the thing is, works like Leaves of Grass that he left behind will be read long, long after we're dead. And he did that by having the balance of working the day job and then coming home and working on his poetry. And there's something instructive about that for all of our careers that not every career path is going to afford you the kind of instant fame. But it's like Brad said, it's a marathon. Walt Whitman's career was a marathon, not a sprint. He was working on that poetry all the time. He was holding, frankly, crap jobs. And in the marathon of his life, he won that marathon. The work that he created in the background of his career, all those years, all those decades, will outlast all of us. And so, I don't know. I find something vaguely with people like Whitman or Emily Dickinson working quietly in her own house, and they leave behind this incredible body of work. And I kind of suspect that that's what Watterson's doing right now himself. But anyway.
Well, and that fits right in with one of the themes that we stated at the beginning of this year, Dave, for this show, and that is to de-demonize the idea of a day job. To take back that phrase, don't quit your day job, and make it more of a positive encouragement.
Yeah,
if you
take the stigma off the day job and you see that your career is a marathon, then you see that each of these little steps is important in a balance. And as you breathe in Dylan's gold, as she was saying, you're going to see that you're exhaling blue because I love that because I had that exact same lecture from a meditation person in LA once. That's amazing. Although for me it was breathing in clear and exhaling black. You were getting rid of all the negativity.
The emotional toxins.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. Like, let go of your day and breathe out black. But anyway, I want to thank Dylan for being here today. It was always a pleasure to have you on the old microphone. Thank you for this.
No, you're welcome.
While we have one more chance, is there anything you'd like to promote, direct people to? Last words of wisdom?
You should check out my website, DylanMaconis.com. I've got some exciting announcements coming up just in the next week. That Oni comic is going to be officially announced in the next few days. Pretty exciting.
Oh, that's exciting. Yeah. By the time that we get this up, this might be already announced. So head over there now.
A lot of people write me emails. This happens all the time. And they say, Brad, we love Comics Lab. We love Comic Lab. They don't put the F's in. They say, Brad, we love Comic Lab. But sometimes, my budget is such I cannot I can't be a Patreon backer. Well, listen, here's one way. If you really, truly love Comic Lab, you love the experience you just had listening to Dylan and Dave and I, when you see her make that announcement on social media, and you will, because you're going to go and follow her like right now because you want more of this, retweet it. Reshare it, get out there and give it a boost. Those little hearts, the likes, that stuff, the thumbs up don't mean shit. You know this because you're in webcomics. You know that the hearts and the thumbs mean nothing. What you want to hit is retweet and share and amplify that.
I don't know why, but that made me laugh. Your hearts and your thumbs, that doesn't mean shit.
I might be a little smarmy because it's been for the NPR channel we've got here. It's been pledge week for the last 2 weeks. So I find myself drifting into that same kind of delivery.
I just like that phrasing of your hearts and your thumbs. They don't mean shit. Get out of here with your hearts and your thumbs. You asshole. Get out of here with your hearts and your thumbs. Give me a retweet.
My local NPR affiliate, one of the announcers, had clearly been on fundraising shift for a little bit too long because at some point he was just like, be an adult and subscribe. Do the right thing. Get grown up. It's like, whoa.
I know. It is funny when you get the 2 a.m.
I would have actually responded.
When you get the 2 a.m. person who's been on for like 6 hours and they're like, you know what? If you're listening to NPR right now and you're not subscribing, you're stealing. You're stealing it. You're like, oh, God, Jim. Oh, somebody get Jim off the mic. Oh, God. Oh, got real awkward.
Oh. Dylan, do you know what?
Yes, Brad.
You've been listening to Comic Lab. It's the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Oh, and Dylan, we forgot to tell you, your hosts have been Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and cartoonist of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And Dylan, don't listen to him. Listen to me when I tell you that your co-host has also been Dave Kellett, the co-director of Stripped, and you know how much he loves Stripped, and the cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com.
And Dylan, lest we forget, the Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net.
Dylan, lest we remember, Comic Lab is made possible by your support on patreon.com/comiclab. So we'll go ahead and say that twice. patreon.com/comiclab.
And today's sponsor.
In a world where humans are endangered and live among mythical beasts, the name of God, Advent Light, follows the story of a young monk who receives a prophecy from the gods of his world and must travel between truth before tensions rise. And war seals humanity's fate. The Deimos Chronicles.co/comic/1.